Venu, welcome everyone. We're going to go a little bit out of order to accommodate my very esteemed colleague, Senator Monroe, and we will start out with a public hearing on Senate Bill 594.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. ORS Chapter 307.150 states that certain qualified cemeteries and crematory associations shall be exempt from property taxation. The current law specifies that eligible properties are to be owned and actually occupied by any cemetery or crematory associations incorporated under the law of Oregon. So what this bill does is that it permits property tax exemption claim for cemetery and crematory property regardless of claimant's organizational structure or state of organization. And it permits claim for exemption for tax years beginning on or after July 1, 2008, and it allows late filing for exemption claims and specify a late filing procedure.
Okay. Thank you. And we have with us today Senator Monroe. Why don't you get started and introduce your guests?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. It gives me a great deal of pleasure. I feel kind of comfortable in here, having spent most of my life on revenue.
If you've spent your life here, you know that you have to give your name for the record.
My name is Rod Monroe, and I'm a senator from District 24. And Sunnyside Chimes Memorial Garden is right next to my district, and I became aware of this problem. Back in 1987.
How long have you been here?
Yeah, that's right. In 87, when I was sitting where you are, Madam Chair, we passed legislation to make sure that burial properties were exempt from taxation. In 2005, when I was not here, the legislature messed that up, and it became unclear whether or not privately owned burial property was also exempt. And there are some 58 such pieces of property around the state. Only one of them has ever gotten a tax bill, and that is Sunnyside Chimes Memorial Garden in Clackamas County, because the assessor there looked at the law that was passed in 2005 and determined that, well, maybe they could tax actual burial plots. Burial grounds have never been taxed anywhere in the United States. The buildings in privately owned facilities, the chapels and so on, are taxed, but not the actual burial land. And this just clarifies that, in fact, burial lands are not subject to property taxes. I have with me today Mr. Ty Cochran of the Cemetery Association of Oregon, and over on my far left, Mr. David Schroeder, who is the administrator of the Sunnyside Chimes Memorial Garden. And I'll turn the testimony over to them.
Okay, and I would just remind you, you also have to introduce yourself for the record, even though Senator Monroe already did it. Thank you.
Madam Chair, my name is Ty Cochran. I'm with the Cemetery Association of Oregon. We're here today because of the unintended consequences of a 2005 bill that Senator Monroe spoke about that limited tax exemptions for certain LLCs, mainly cemeteries in our case. With the research we've done on the 2005 bill, it's very obvious that the intent of the 2005 bill was not to limit the exemptions on cemetery property taxes. If it was their intent, they would have changed many other statutes at the same time. There's a wide range of ownership structures in cemeteries. There's nonprofits, there's for-profits, there's several lodge affiliations like the Masonics and the Odd Fellows. There's a limnus area such as the Archdiocese, and then there's corporations, partnerships, and then there's, of course, LLCs. Unfortunately, because of the 2005 bill, the cemeteries that are structured as LLCs became a taxable entity. Although not one county tax department taxed any of the cemeteries since the passage of the 2005 bill until last October in the Portland area, with the gentleman to my left got his Dear John tax statement. When the cemetery received the property tax statement, Mr. Schroeder questioned them, they in turn went to the State Revenue Department for clarification because it was very convoluted. They in turn asked the Attorney General's office their take on it. The AG said it cannot be changed by administrative rule and the language would have to be changed in statute. So here we are asking for your support of Senate Bill 594 that would reinstate the property tax exemptions for all cemeteries regardless of their ownership structures. And I believe John Phillips from the Revenue Department was going to be here. I don't know if he is, but if you're going to ask me any questions about corporate tax structures, you might want to save them for him if he's available because I don't know anything about it. I have some fast facts for you just quickly. The 4-acre cemetery, which is a very, very small cemetery that is owned by the gentleman next to me, his property tax statement was right at $18,000. I work at a cemetery that's 55-plus acres, and you can imagine what that property tax statement would be. The cemeteries nowadays, with the cremation rate being so high, are plagued by revenue shortfalls, and I believe that most of these cemeteries, and Mr. Schroeder can attest to this, that most of them would probably walk away with them after the first year of their tax statements. So with that, I'd appreciate your support on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions in committee? Thank you. Next.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is David Schroeder, and I am the administrator for Sunnyside Chimes Memorial Garden in Clackamas County. And I don't think I can really add much to what Senator Monroe and Ty Cochran have already explained to you. However, we were quite taken aback when we received a property tax statement on burial grounds, which historically have never, ever been taxed in the state of Oregon, nor any other state of the union that we're aware of. So we, at that point, went to the Cemetery Association of Oregon, and they, in turn, went to Senator Monroe to explain the issues, and he took those forward for us, and we appreciate it very much, and I have actually submitted some written testimony also that you might read, and we would appreciate your support on this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions of any of these witnesses? Well, they say nothing is as certain as death and taxes, and this bill actually has both, so I think you can count on this bill coming back to us. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else who wanted to testify on this bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did work with John Phillips of the Department of Revenue to make sure that that all our facts were straight, and we had a little problem with LC getting it exactly right, but in fact, it took them about three tries, but we now have that legislation and before you, and I believe it is clean and ready to go.
Thank you very much, Senator Monroe. Okay, thank you. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 594 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 347. Change staff here. Ask Senator Nelson to join us with whoever you'd like to bring. Good afternoon, Mazen.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This is only a coincidence, having the cemetery bill and then the state tax. No pun intended on behalf of Paul.
We're a soup to nuts operation here.
This is good.
Madam Chair, if you'd like, I'll go through what we have done in the last two sessions, being the 2007 session and then the special session of the 2008 in regard to where the estate taxation is. And that might shed some light on where things start having a little different treatment from what they used to be. In the in your SMS, I have a little background on how the estate taxation in Oregon that we have been following. In 2003, we connected to the federal law of 1997 and chose not to connect to the 2001 what's so-called Economic Growth and Tax Reconciliation Act. And as a result of that process, we stayed with the $1 million threshold that is applicable against a schedule of tax, and that schedule of tax comes from the Federal Tax Code of 1997, and we apply our Oregon states to it. In the 2007 session, there was an introduction of the concept of having the family-owned farms of what has been termed to be the natural resource type of estate, that is fishing, agriculture, small timber, and fisheries business, to be or giving some level of exemption at the $7.5 million limit. Having established that concept, the 2007 session passed the House Bill 3201, and 3201 was at that time assumed to be effective as of January 1st of 2007. Although it was passed by the 2007 session in a later time, and then, of course, signed by the governor later on. However, when the time came for the Department of Revenue to put the 2007 law into interpretation and into the process of how to apply that law, they found a whole bunch of difficult ways of interpreting what kind of properties apply to it, what kind of capital, what are we talking about when we were talking about the $7.5 million. Was it an exclusion of the top of the estate, or was it if up to $7.5 million, and then if that does not work, then the exemption goes for nothing? So was it a cliff, and was it, so all these difficult issues at that time became all of a sudden part of the issues that the February 2008 session dealt with. And that, as you remember, Madam Chair, we had a whole segment of our session in February dealing with the issue. And the resolution for all these issues that we have at that time was to establish first several definitions of what is a natural resource property is, what is the working capital definition, how it applies, and so on. And then the amounts of tax, or when tax is due and when tax starts tapering off, whether it's a cutoff or a cliff, if you will, or a slow type of incline. The way this was dealt with is by establishing a credit schedule in the statutes. And that credit schedule in the statutes came from $1 million to $7.5 million was equivalent to the amount of taxation that would have been otherwise levied, which means you're giving back in credit what tax would have been one for one almost. And then by the time it gets to $7.5 million, that is the highest level of credit, it starts tapering down until it goes back to zero at the $15 million level. And that's the way the law as it stands today. The bill in front of you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, what it does is retroactively changes, or the changes the retroactive date from January 1st to May 1st, 2007. That in itself will basically just change the whole different two bills, the 3201 of the 2007 and then 3618 of the 2008, February 2008. What you would have in the difficulty is how we are looking at which law that applies at that time.
Okay, so, Mazen, if we did change that effective date, the questions would still remain that about how it should be interpreted as an exclusion or as a...
My understanding, Madam Chair, that yes, House Bill 3201 was not definitive in what applies to which and what kind of definitions are applicable in law. And that's why the House Bill 3618 of the February 2008 session was necessary in order to explain those.
Okay, thank you very much. And we are joined today by Senator Nelson and Mr. Grilley.
Yes. Yes, thank you, Chair. My name is David Nelson, State Senator from District 29, which is Northeast Oregon. I live in Pendleton, Oregon. As you can tell by the testimony, this has been a very complicated bill, and I think the Chair, when you worked through it in 2007, 2008, was very complicated, and maybe some of the intent that the committee in those particularly times, the intent was maybe not carried out by the Department of Revenue, or else they ran into a different type of intent. And so when Mr. Grilley came to me during the interim and said, well, this is a situation. My mother had passed away, and she was a great horse rider, too, so I thought I'd mention that to the chair. And was riding horses till she was probably within a month of the day that she died. I mean, she's just 90 years old. 98. I mean, just is an incredible lady, basically. But he brought this story to me, saying that they, you know, she passed away in April, I think, of 2007, and the state was cleared out before the end of the year, before the bill in 2008 was paid. So everything was taken care of, and then all of a sudden they get a bill from the Department of Revenue for some $40,000, $45,000. And you can probably understand how that's a little shock when you think everything's taken care of. So when Wes came to me and I said, well, let's see what we can do. I'll bring it before the legislature and let the committees look at it. And I appreciate the chair's willingness to hear this bill. We discussed a little bit about the date, the May 1 date on the bill. The reason why that was there was basically when I talked with the Department of Revenue, Deborah Buchanan, that was the recommendation I got back from them. But I think maybe perhaps if she's here, I don't know if she's here, if this bill continues to move forward, I think that's something you ought to look at, because maybe that isn't the right date. I'm not really quite sure of the rationale why they recommended that May 1st date. And I was going to amend the bill before we came to the hearing, but then I decided, well, maybe I'll come to the hearing and see what the testimony is, and if there is a potential for amendments, I'd be more than happy to do that. I just looked at this bill as a sense of fairness, and I think probably Wes and we have two or three other witnesses in these estates, and I think there's probably about 15 estates that have been affected by this. And I don't know that... I can't tell you exact figure of money that's involved, maybe less than $500,000 over the $480,000 over the 15 estates. And they kind of average out somewhere between $30,000 and $40,000. But to me, it was just a sense of fairness. And I thought, well, you know, people out on the streets don't really have a high regard of politicians. And then we do something retroactively that further creates that impression that we're really not looking after them. And I know that's not our intent. I don't think we mean to do that. But when we do these things retroactively, it always causes problems and there's unintended consequences. So, Wes, if you'd introduce yourself and continue to tell your story.
Okay. The ball has been passed on. Well, thank you, Senator Verdick, and Chair of the Committee, for scheduling this meeting. And thank you, members of the committee, Senator Telfer and Haas and Morris and Rosenbaum. We're glad you're all here. For the record, my name is Albert Wesley Grilley. However, I'm known as Wesley Grilley. My address is 604 Southwest Haley in Pendleton. My mailing address, Post Office Box 817. And I represent just myself and my family. The thoughts, ideas, and statements that I have in my written testimony are entirely mine. You'll notice on the back of the testimony that I gave you, it's rather thick because I've enclosed not only paraphrases of the letters that were mailed to Senator Nelson at the request of the Department of Revenue. He asked them for the names of people so we could find out how much this has happened. And due to confidentiality, they declined. However, they did send a letter to those that they felt were affected to contact Senator Nelson. He, in turn, gave me permission to provide the informational material to all of the people, so we have all of that there. And as you go through there, you'll notice that I'm not sure how to say about the Senate Bill 347, but the whole issue has to do with fairness, ethics, and just plain doing the right thing. You'll notice that the revenue that was obtained from that, which we only got as a guess from the letters that we have, is we're guessing at around $480,000. And that's revenue that is not budgeted revenue. That's just some cash that the state ended up with someplace. And because of this, we've caused an awful lot of harm to farm families. And basically, the concerns, as you'll see that, instead of this bill becoming effective on the 91st day, which was May 23rd, 2008, it has a retroactive clause that taxes estates going back a year and a half to January 1, 2007. So it's retroactive. And then all estates, after we had filed all of our returns and everything, were required then to file an amended return. So we went back to our attorney, we went back to our accountants, and, you know, imagine that is the comments that we had, especially from our accountants. A year and a half we have to go back, you know, before the effective date. So I'm just saying, well, that's what it is. My family had to pay $45,611. The average of the 14 estates that we have here was $34,000 of all of those. And, you know, that's big money for farm families. Out of that total expenditure, $480,000 is, I think, 0.3% of the so-called state budget. So it's, you know, to us, it's really big money. To the state, it may not be, but I think you'd agree it still is, especially in this year. And I always think, you know, think of it yourself. If we could put you in the same thing, if you'd bought a piece of equipment for your business or something like that, and you deducted it on your income tax and everything, you just went along, and then 4 or 5 months later you get a bill saying, whoops, the legislature dropped that exemption, so now you owe us X amount of dollars. Well, that's what happened to all of us. So I worked, when I found that out, I got a hold of this, Dave said, or Senator Dave. I contacted the 14 estates, and you'll see the underlying tone of every one of those letters in there is just unfair. And by the way, there are two estates that were not able to be here, and I have given their written testimony, and I would appreciate those being placed in the record. One of them, a letter from Mark Bennett, and another letter from Rebecca McClintic, as well as another letter from Renee Ugrin.
We will include those in the record, Mr. Grilley. Thank you.
Yes, and thank you. This is a tough time for a lot of farmers to be here, because we're starting the farm season, and this bill, the retroactive taxation affected basically the small, medium, the lower end of the farmers, as witnessed by the average $34,000 of additional revenue was cost. So it's affecting the smaller ones, the ones that are doing the work. Mr. Bennett was saying that he has some, if those of you in farming know that first calf heifers, and he's a rancher, and he lives in Unity, which is 60 miles on the other side of Baker, which is 8 hours from here. He called me yesterday. He has 2 inches of snow, whole bunch of calves going. He had hired a private plane to fly him down here. But he says, I don't think with all the snow it's a good idea to come down. So that's when he sent this. And then a number of other people who could have been here are now doing farming, because, you know, that's what they have to do. There are some other issues relating to some of my attorney friends use the word ex post facto, after the fact, and that the ex post facto is basically, it's not constitutional. It's in the U.S. Constitution. It's also in the Oregon Constitution, which I've mentioned in there. We have some due process under the law kind of things about no notification. You know, it's just a surprise, just other than a very nice letter. The Department of Revenue, in my thing, is in different phone calls with Deborah Buchanan, Joanna Mitchell, who's an auditor, and all, has been very professional, very polite, very nice, very fair. And as one respondent said, as you'll see in there, you know, have my clients been harmed? He says, heck yes, they've been harmed. I'm not aware, and maybe, and I'm sure you'll know more, that there's known opponents to this 347. We're simply talking about fairness in the entire thing. So we hope that this committee, we hope that you guys and gals will direct the Department of Revenue to remove this harm, or do your action to remove the harm caused by the 2008 session, House Bill 3614, and I'm not sure about the 18. I'm not into that. And I'd hope you would return the monies to our farm families. We just think it's not only ethical, but it's certainly the right thing to do. Madam Chairman, that ends my informal testimony. I'd be glad to answer any questions, and we have some other respondents that would like to visit with you also.
Mr. Grilley, your mom passed away when did you?
April 7th, 2007.
So
my mother was extremely alert mentally until just a few weeks before she died, and I imagine she's probably grumbling to herself right now saying, Sonny, what happened?
Because the original bill that passed creating the exemption was itself made retroactive. Had that bill not passed, your estate would have been covered under, would have had no exemption whatsoever.
Yes, ma'am. And from what I understand, however, that also had something like a minimum or a law under that. And we were all under that. And I think everyone that would respond would have been under that, to where basically no tax was due.
Right, but it was retroactive, so I assume that when you are objecting to retroactivity, you're objecting to the second bill being retroactive, but not the first bill.
I had absolutely no knowledge about that.
Right.
If I'm following your thinking, whatever occurred in 2007, I'm certainly not an accountant, and I'm not sure that our accountants, however professional that they may be, I'm not sure that they read tax codes every day.
It was in fact retroactive, and if it hadn't been, did your accountants ever figure out what your liability would have been for your estate if there had been no, because this exemption was passed for the benefit of natural resource property.
Yes,
and we understand. The problem here is that it was unclear in the interpretation, and the revenue impact was based on one interpretation, and some people, including yourself, based your filing on another interpretation, and that's why we did it in 2008. But did you go back? Did you ever go back and figure out what the benefit was to your estate from the interpretation that was put in place in 2008 and applied retroactively, as compared to what you would have paid if there had been no exemption passed at all?
No, ma'am, not to my knowledge. You know, as farmers, we deal with the growing crop that's here today. And I remember last year we didn't have much moisture, so you know we don't go backwards. We just know what in the world happened to us this particular time. Most all private businessmen, including farmers, are highly cash, sometimes just a cash funnel going down. But on the other hand, no. And I don't see any reason what we would have gained by doing that. We take the laws as provided by our legislators, and take them as they come. And when the letter, as the some of the letters, and you may hear it today, when the letter came stating that you have to file an amended thing, yes, then that was done, and that the letter happened to be under the new taxes where that was removed and being retroactive back there, just was another $45,000 bill, and I had to call up, the state was already distributed, which I think you'll find, too, was a thing of, hello, have you spent any of that money? We've got to come up with that $45,000.
Would it be okay with you if we could get you together with the Department of Revenue and figure out what the liability would have been before the exemption was passed under the interpretation of 2008, so we could have a true comparison?
I'd be glad, I'd be glad to work with the Department of Revenue as much as I can. My experience, other than having to pay him some money, has been very well, as I say, very professional with the Department of Revenue. I've felt that, that they have followed the rules and laws as you have provided for them. I'm not sure how that would work, because today I just know that if we would have had an opportunity to know what the law was, my mother, as I say, was mentally alert until the last few days. She had her estate fully planned. She was and even though I'm her son, I'll back up what David says. She was an amazing woman. She had everything done. And she had planned, she had used that as part of her estate planning. So if we would have known, then, mother, the law changed and you can't use that. And I'm sure she would say, well, I'll go down and fix it, like she normally said. Physically, she would, mentally, she could have. But nevertheless, it would have been done if we would have known. But there was absolutely no knowledge. I think the 2008 session, I'd like to call it hectic, but on the other hand, I think it was really quite efficient. It was, a lot of things were happening. And I think it was just one of those things that slipped. I want to say that the retroactive portion very well could have just slipped in. I don't see.
No, wait. I was chairing that. We did that very intentionally because.
Oh, okay.
Just so you know, we did it because there were several interpretations possible from the 2000 bill. And your accountant did one interpretation. There were other interpretations that could have been done, and it was not clear. So we clarified it. But our revenue impact for it was based on one interpretation, and that was it. But it wasn't clear. So we were fixing it then, and we made it retroactive to when the benefit first became available. And that's the history of it. And so it's not, there's... The fact of the matter is that you still had a benefit. You just didn't have as good a benefit as you thought because of the 2008 action. Mm-hmm. Because your estate was still treated preferentially. It just wasn't as good of a benefit as you thought it was.
Well, thank you for mentioning it. However, I didn't. I had no knowledge of that. I work with what's right, what's on hand. I work with what is in the inventory, versus going back and saying the what ifs. Well, don't we all do what
yeah.
if? Gee, if
it
I
was
could
an
have done
unfortunate
this, I
situation
done this and all.
For sure.
But this what if just happened to really hit us in a cash thing. With a total surprise, and I think it's correct to use even the stronger term of shock, just saying, what's going on? The first call was to my accountant, the second call to the attorney who I found out he had called, and let's see, the third call was to the heirs, and then I think I ran into David, and what's going on?
Well, you hit the right one there.
Well, he's a good guy, and we appreciate him being there, and we appreciate all the things that you all do. I'm not sure very many people say really thank you for having that 7 o'clock meeting, and you finished at 10 o'clock, and you're going to start again the next morning. But nevertheless, I certainly hope that your committee, Chairman, would look at this and give some action and perhaps give some release into the farm community. The average of $34,000 to us is a lot of money, and we'd appreciate anything that you would do, and we appreciate that you would clear that.
Thank you. Are there questions of Mr. Grilley or Senator Nielsen? Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. Has probate been closed and a final tax return filed, or has this issue caused probate to remain open?
No, it was all closed. I can't answer for anybody else, but I think with everyone else affected, probate has all been closed. You know, the 9 month and after that is done, I very well probate could be continuing, but I not an art mistake, not mistake. Freudian slip there, excuse me. But nevertheless, no, in our estate of my mother, no, it's been closed, and everything was distributed.
Follow up?
Yeah, please.
So probate and the final tax return was filed based on the court saying this is it, you know, this is the final. Prior to being notified by Oregon that you owed money, or was... subsequent to Oregon notifying you?
Whoops, I'm in trouble. I think the answer is yes. If I look at the what we refer to as the letter, that came in March 14th. That's from the Department of Revenue.
And your estate was closed.
The estate was closed. I am guessing either the last of February 2008 or the first part. I'm almost positive the estate was closed because we didn't have the money.
Thank you. And the reason I ask that question for the committee's sake is that when the courts say that the state's closed and it's closed and all the assets are gone, there really isn't anything to come back on. It's like a dissolution of a company that no longer exists, and so Oregon Department of Revenue has gone back asking for an entity that no longer exists that's been closed based on the court saying it's closed. So there's another little cog in the wheel there as far as the legality of an entity not even existing anymore. So,
okay, we'll check into that. Any other questions? Thank you very much for coming all this
You're
way.
Very welcome, and thank you.
Okay, David Fuse or Fuge? Why don't we bring up Janet Fisher and Larry Miller too, and the three of you can sit here just like you've been sitting there. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for having us here today and listening to us. My name for the record is David Patrick Fuge. I live on Grand Island. My address is 15591 Southeast Lower Island Road, Dayton, Oregon. I'm here because of my mother's estate. I was the executor of the will. Before she passed away, she thought she had her entire estate in order as far as over the $1 million mark. We were just over the $1 million mark, not a whole lot. I think it was $100,000 over, and we ended up paying $42,000 in tax. And as it was, when my mother died in October, we wouldn't have owed any tax or very, very little tax with the resource, the way the bill was written originally. And my attorney, the way he explained it to me, the estate attorney, was that we owed that amount of money on the farm. Fortunately, we had enough liquid assets that we could pay it, because I don't know what we would have done had we had to liquidate, because we can't deed off 5 acres and sell it to get money. We would have had to sell either the whole farm or something like that. We didn't have to do that, fortunately. But this was something that was just basically a slap in the face to to the estate because we thought we had everything taken care of. And, you know, had we known that you guys were going to do this, we would have done something differently. We would have formed an LLC or something else. And not that we're trying to get out of paying taxes, but, you know, you do everything you legally can to get out of, you know, to make a business work. So that's where I'm coming from.
Okay, it sounds to me like you might have been... It was the problem that your property wasn't defined, it didn't fall under the definition of natural resource property? Because I'm...
No, it did.
You tell me, that sounds like a very high tax burden under this bill, regardless of how you interpret it. If you fell under the bill and you're just slightly over $1 million, which you're excluded anyway, that's puzzling to me.
Well, see, the way... that was the bill that was sent to us by the Revenue Department. And some of the farm ground is over in Canby. Mm-hmm. And my brother and I had split the estate, basically. And he got the farmhouse over in Canby. And I got part of the land over there, and I got the entire land and the farmhouse down on the island property. And so the Canby real estate is worth a whole lot more than what the island property is. So that kind of upped the difference between, I mean, the house and everything over there in Canby was well over $300,000. Well, I can't remember the exact number, but it was really high as far as what the property value of the house was. Well, that just knocked us out of the ballpark. And then there was a place down at the coast that we had that we're selling that was added in there. And I mean, this here was, I mean, that just blew us out of the ballpark. Had we not had the place down at the coast, or if Mom had died a year later, like right now, and then we had the place assessed, the place wouldn't be assessed for that because it'd be well under the $1 million mark at this point in time.
Mr. Fugia, how much is the estate?
It was like $1,100,000 and something. I can't remember the exact number.
And you didn't qualify for what? You didn't qualify for natural resource property. Is that mm-hmm. how it worked?
I see. But we would have under the old bill, we would have qualified. The way we were set up, we would have qualified for the way it was set up. The way I understand.
I see.
Because we did make some. That's interesting. We'll move on, and then maybe we can talk more about that. What did you talk about?
Thank you, Senator Burdick, and Senator Moore, Senator Rosenbaum.
Actually, why don't you pull that one back to him, and then
okay.
you use
I'm
that one there.
Okay.
If you use both of them, we get feedback.
Okay. Everyone. my name is Janet Fisher. I was personal representative for the estate of Eugene H. Fisher. I think some of you may know him and may have known him. He spent a little time around here years ago. Our family farm is a century farm. It's been in the family for 140 years, and so it's very important for me to keep it in the family. The retroactive tax caused by the new change resulted in an increase of $46,607. To our family, and another $1,395 in accounting fees. So this, you know, it definitely did hurt. And incidentally, my probate was closed in January of 2008 before the new law occurred. So all the distributions were made, everything was closed out. And then I got the letter, and we had to come up with that extra cash.
So I'll ask you the same question I asked Mr. Grilly. Did you ever figure out how much benefit you got from the, in other words, from having it move off of the just straight $1 million?
I don't know the exact amount. I was aware of the other bill being retroactive, but
Would you be willing to share that with the Department of Revenue, that information?
I'd have to get it from my accountant.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Madam Chair, my name is Larry Miller, and I represent the estate of Lucille Miller. Our family, my parents bought the farm after my father got out of the service and farmed up until his retirement. It's in northeastern Oregon, Mountain Free Water. The full livelihood of my mother and father and my uncle, because they filed farm jointly on this piece of land, was this farming operation. In September 7th of 2007, our mother passed away. My other heir is my brother and I. My father had passed away in 1996, and so we filed the estate tax return, and by, I believe, about March 1st of 2008, and then the special session was in session, and the House Bill 3618 was passed. Then we received a letter from the Department of Revenue saying that either we could amend our return or the state would calculate the amount of tax due. In our situation, we did not qualify for the natural resource, and so we ended up paying $24,055 of a tax. In the provision, besides the retroactiveness of or being retroactive, it went back to deaths occurring after January 1st of 2007, which would be the case of mother's death. But in House Bill 3618, there is a provision that says that the natural resource property needs to be 50% or greater, or something around 50% mark. In this case, we did not qualify because the other part of the state was the money that my parents saved during their farming days, some 50 years of farming, to provide for their health and well-being when they were. So that's the part of the bill of House Bill 3618. We received no benefit from it because of the provision that was put into it that was not in the original 3201. I came here today because Wesley mentioned, I received a letter that he was working with Senator Nelson, and quite frankly, I was here to kind of understand why the changes between House Bill 3201 and 3618, and through your gentleman's explanation, I understand that the way it was written originally, there was some questions. I guess to finalize is that there will be some relief for family farms. You know, the farm still exists. It's still in the family. We continue, hope to continue for a number of years. One of my mother's goal was that it become a century farm. We're about halfway there, and we hope that it will be. It is very tough in that particular, tough of all places, but especially in the Wall Valley. There's a really a challenge with water. Because dwindling water supply, and it's very hard to make a living, and then to now have to pay this additional tax is just additional challenges to keep this as a family farm.
Mr. Miller, where's your land again?
It's in Mountain Free Water.
Mountain Free Water. And what do you grow in it?
Right now it's alfalfa and wheat.
Well, thank you for coming. You came all the way from Milton.
I actually live in Tigard now.
Oh, you do? You're my constituent. Maybe a good thing or not. Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there questions, Senator Morris?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Where did your father live, Janet?
down near Oakland.
Was the Gene Fisher that I knew?
I think he is, yes.
Uh-huh. He's a very fine man.
Thank you.
Senator Morris, could you tell us about him? Was he in the legislature?
No, he was on the State Board of Education for many years.
Oh.
And he was also involved in agriculture, different farm credit and that kind of thing.
And I became acquainted with your father when he was a trustee at Northwest Christian
NCC,
University.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you all for coming. Are there more questions? Thank you all for coming.
I'd like to add one more thing.
Please.
I would like, you know, this committee to, or this body here to act on this bill and not pass it on to someone else, you know, to die in committee. That would be very important to me. And I know my mother planned the estate to just so we wouldn't have to pay a huge tax. And because of what happened in the special session, and I'm not pointing fingers, it just worked out that way. We ended up paying a lot of tax. And I'm a little concerned personally about the retroactive tax thing because I don't know that it doesn't set a precedent. And where does it stop?
And when did your mom pass away again?
It was 07 in October, the beginning of October. I can't remember the exact date.
And Mazin, when did the original bill go into effect? Was it, did it have an emergency clause?
Madam Chair, it would probably would have been 91 days after Sonny died, which would has would put it on October.
So it's possible that the if you didn't have bills being retroactive, you would have not been covered anyway, because the original bill was retroactive as well.
Right, but what I'm saying is that the original bill, the way the attorneys looked at it when my mom went in, if it wasn't retroactive, you know, if it wasn't passed that way, which it probably shouldn't have been retroactive, he should have just passed it and said from this date forward, that's the way it is. Then the retroactive thing shouldn't be. Mom would have planned something differently on the estate, and I wouldn't be sitting here today, you know, making a statement to all of you fine people. And that's kind of what I'm saying. You know, if we didn't get into all this retro this and retro that, then it's too confusing. And we got caught up in something. Like I say, we would have done something differently. We would have formed an LLC or some other thing that would have taken care of this situation once and for all. So that's kind of where I'm at, that this whole retro thing is not really fair.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for this panel?
Madam Chair, I'll check and see when House Bill, you know, since House Bill 3201 was a tax bill, it could not have an emergency clause on it. So it could not have been effective on signature of the governor.
Actually, it could have an emergency clause because it didn't raise revenue. It lost revenue. So I believe that's the law. But we'll get it.
We'll check it.
Yeah, we'll check it out. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. We have Tammy Denny signed up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tammy Denny. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Wheat Growers League. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 347 and basically speaking on behalf of our constituents, two of which you heard from earlier, Mr. Miller and Mr. Grilley. It's unfortunate when an organization such as the Oregon Wheat Growers League endorses a piece of legislation with the intention of doing something positive for our constituents and the unintended consequence come home to roost, and that is what's occurred with the passage of House Bill 3618 and its interpretation by the Department of Revenue. We speak favorably for the passage of Senate Bill 347 in the event that that will allow for the return of the damages to the 14 injured parties. We understand that that creates a fiscal, but we also understand that this truly is a fairness issue, and our support and our good name for our association that is more than 80 years in age would have never been lent to a bill that would have done financial harm to our constituents. So for that purpose, we wish to speak in favor of Senate Bill 347 or any piece of legislation that will allow for the return of those damages to these 14 injured parties that the Department of Revenue has assisted Senator Nelson in locating and identifying. And with that, I'll close my testimony and make myself available for any questions that you might have. But thank you very much for hearing this bill. Thank you for allowing Mr. Grilley to speak and for the other injured parties that were able to be with you today. We certainly do appreciate that and hope that we can offer any assistance in returning the damages back to them.
Thank you. Are you saying that the people you represent, if neither bill had passed, would your, in other words, did the people you represent by and large get any benefit whatsoever because the legislation was passed? I mean, from the original bill and the change. In other words, would they have been better off if we had never passed either of them?
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's a difficult question for me to really quantify and measure the answer. I was unaware of the unintended consequence of the passage of 3618 until Mr. Grilley walked into my office and put in front of me the letter from the Department of Revenue indicating that after the closure of the estate, after the distribution of the estate, that now he was faced with another $45,000 bill. Until he brought that to my attention, I had no idea that that injury had occurred. So prior to the passage of 3618, our focus as an industry on 3201 was really more focused on the business energy tax credit portion of 3201. At that particular regular session in 2007, there was a great deal of conversation about renewable energy crops. How could we grow more crops that could be processed for renewable energy in the state? And we spent a great deal of time engaging on that topic, and then 3201 became kind of a larger vehicle for other tax remedies and other tax code provisions. I didn't really spend a great deal of time focusing on any kind of natural resource provisions in 3201. As I said, we really spent a great deal more time talking about business energy tax credits.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Jeff Stone and Sean Cleave. Welcome.
Madam Chair, Jeff Stone, Oregon Association of Nurseries. I'm before you today we heard a lot already about some of the unintended consequences, but I do want to remind the committee about the good work that was done. It was a landmark piece of legislation to help farm, forestry, and fishery operations. It gets to the very heart of not selling off part of your property in order to pay the estate tax. And so I want to commend the legislature for being forward-thinking and trying to pass really landmark and model estate tax reform. But with any type of estate tax reform, there are going to be issues. I happen to touch upon one of the more complicated parts of the tax law. I guess it's my lucky ability to do just that. But I recall still to this day when Paul Warner over there, called Sean and I and said that there was a $42 million problem. The $42 million problem was the difference between exemption and what was the fiscal for House Bill 3201. So we were faced with either looking at repealing the estate tax reform and the good faith that everybody around the table went around to pass, or looked forward to move forward and make it work. So that's how House Bill 3618 came to be, as we looked at a dollar-for-dollar tax credit up to $7.5 million. So that I want to try to give it that type of context about we were faced with either going backward or forward. We chose forward. The intent of House Senate Bill 347 is good. I mean, I think that looking at trying to make whole people who were inadvertently damaged, being one of the few, the people who visited every single office along with Mr. Cleave, to look you in the eye, say this is good policy, a good bill. You know, when people are injured, we take that very seriously. I still firmly believe that estate tax reform, the way that you did it, can serve as a model nationally. So I do not want to underscore or underrepresent the importance of it. The last thing I would say, and I'll go to my friend Mr. Cleave, is there are going to be mechanisms. The rulemaking was very difficult. And I give the Department of Revenue credit trying to do the best they could. And we have a House bill that deals with some of the definitional problems that we continue to have. The link from the federal deduction to the state code. The definition of working capital. So there's some things that my friend from the Farm Bureau is going to bring up. But I want to conclude by saying that I appreciate you having a hearing on this, hearing from the injured parties. And we stand ready to roll up our sleeves right next to you and try to fix this.
Thank you. Sean?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sean Cleave. I represent the Oregon Farm Bureau on a variety of issues, including taxation. About a week and a half after I came on board the Farm Bureau, we received a phone call from a group of attorneys who had worked with the Department of Revenue to implement the existing bill. At that time, being somewhat of a layperson regarding taxation, I was thrown into the deep end with a variety of terms. I had no idea actually there was a difference between an exclusion and an exemption and so on and so forth. But I will tell you there is a big difference, and regarding this bill, it was a $42 million hole. The original 2007 legislation, I believe the term was shall not include. It didn't explicitly say exemption or an exclusion. So when the department came to rulemaking, they interpreted it as an exclusion, meaning a variety of people at any income level would qualify for the natural resource tax program that we had created. And the intent, as Mr. Stone had said, was to keep family farms in Oregon whole so that they could be passed down to the next generation of farmers. As you know, in Oregon, we have a huge problem with an aging demographic of our farmers, and it becomes cost prohibitive to pass that large farm, which our land use system has created, down to even your own relatives, let alone parcel it out and sell it in pieces. So the intent, I'd echo Mr. Stone in saying that the legislature was very forward-thinking in passing the 2007 legislation. As it was alluded to, that legislation was part of an omnibus bill and may not have had the committee time that it deserved to put forward some of those definitions. So in the meantime, we have I'm in the deep end, and we have all these questions coming out from accountants and estate attorneys, and we are trying to do the best we can to move forward. Through conversations we had, we developed the 2008 legislation, which put some parameters over the estates that would qualify. And as Mr. Stone said, that was an attempt to keep the program alive, because obviously that was a large difference from what we had originally intended, the $42 million. And we felt it was in the best interest of the agricultural industry to be good stewards of the process and take care of any non-intended recipients of the legislation. So we did a variety of things that we had agreed to that put the clamps down on who would qualify. We passed the 50% provision that said you have to have, your state must be made up of at least 50% of a qualifying natural resource property. We got definitions. The original legislation, as ironic as it might sound, for small woodlots, there was an interpretation by DOJ that trees, the actual value of the trees, would not qualify under the 2007 legislation. So what had happened was the Department of Revenue had all of these estate filings literally sitting on their desks with no clear way as to process, no real way of it, of knowing whether or not they qualified or not. So we agreed to shrink the pool of those who would qualify under a variety of mechanisms, create the tax schedule, as Mazin had described, and in exchange for that, we would get some working definitions that would give clarity to the Department of Revenue. At that time, another big component of our conversation was any unintended consequences that might be felt as a passage of the 2008 legislation on people who have already filed their taxes. Prior to my job at the Farm Bureau, I had actually worked in this building, and I had seen a variety of constituent groups, albeit infrequent and usually very small, but people who had been harmed by a variety of tax policies that fell into certain windows, and sometimes we were able to help those people. But I just had this feeling in the back of my mind that we need to do our best to have a hold no harm provision of that legislation. And after a work group, we had all agreed that that would be the path we would go down. Now, what had happened after the agreement was that we had an interpretation from legislative counsel that said you cannot have two classes of people that would apply under a statute differently. So that hold no harm provision was dropped for constitutional reasons. In hindsight, we may have just made the 2008 legislation forward applying only. That would have dealt with the hold no harm issue. However, for anybody who did not have a had a property that was in this definitional limbo, it would have created problems because they would have been had to apply under the 2007 legislation, which was vastly incomplete. So the choice was to move ahead with a new bill in 2007 or 2008 that would apply retroactively to the same date that that 2007 legislation did. And I just wanted to put a couple things on the record as far as what had happened between then and now. And I'm sorry I'm going a little long. It's, as Mr. Stone said, a very long technical and unfortunate process that these people have kind of fallen into this little window. I did want to point out one thing, and then I'll wrap up. Chair Burdick, you had asked a couple questions, which I think are very relevant for the situation. You had asked whether or not these people's estates would have benefited from the 2008 legislation, what the difference may have been, and that's a good question. I would point out that for any estate that filed under this program and they chose to take the new Oregon Natural Resource Credit, if their estate was under a $1 million threshold, they would have still qualified for the existing estate tax exemption that we have. So if they had made a choice under that $1 million threshold to use the natural resource tax credit rather than the existing exemption, $1 million exemption that applies broadly, not just for natural resources, then there may have been some harm done unintentionally. And I think that's a very valid thing that the committee should look into. And we'll be happy to work with the Department of Revenue and those members of ours who may have been harmed to identify what those differences would be. And with that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you. Well, for someone who is the most newbie, you actually are very clear in how you...
We're all surprised, Madam Chair.
Excuse me?
We're all surprised. No, just kidding.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Last witness signed up, Jim Welsh. I didn't tell you you could bring Mr. Beyer with you. Welcome.
Chair Burdick and committee members, Jim Welsh representing Oregon Cattlemen Association, and also I have testimony here for Oregon State Grange. As you recognize those names as large components of our rural sector in this state. And we have been very supportive even through 2007, and I just want to thank you for having holding a hearing on this to talk a little bit about the injured parties. One, which Mr. Bennett had provided his testimony, couldn't be here. He is a member of Oregon Cattlemen Association also. And so you've heard plenty of testimony. I'm not an expert on this issue, and I certainly support what Mr. Cleave and Mr. Stone have worked on, and they gave you a very good explanation of what the intent and the consequences are, and we're certainly concerned about those consequences, and we think that it would be a good idea if we could get some sort of a fix for that. And with that, I don't have anything else, just that we're very supportive, and we'll be very helpful wherever possible. So,
thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here representing Oregon Seed Council and Oregon Dairy Farmers. I'd like to put on the record that I don't know of any members in either group that this current legislation would affect. There may be, they may be one of the 14 that we've heard of. I don't know if they are or not. My testimony is simply from someone who's lived through a situation, something, you know, dealing with estate taxes in the past. And I think that the idea of having to go back and reopen an estate that has already been closed is appalling. And hopefully this committee will look at this very narrow exemption for the hold no harm rule and realize that that is the fair way, whether the original bill treated them, how it treated them. If a family has to go back and reopen an estate that's been closed, as Senator Telfer said, it may not be legal, one, but it just the emotional difficulty of having to ask people to do that would be incredible. So I ask you to look for that reason. I understand there is another bill. There's another issue with in this arena that was done last session. This is not the bill, but I just wanted to put my testimony on the record so that if there is a work group working on the issue this session or anybody working on it, I would like to be part of that so I could be involved in the debate. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Thank you very much. Is there anybody else in the audience who'd like to testify on this? Deborah, do you have anything to add on this, having heard the testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. Madam Chair, I could just answer a couple of questions that came up. The effective date of House Bill 3201, that was September 27th, 2007.
Okay, thank you.
The question about how the date of May 1 was arrived at, we did work with legislative counsel on that. There was a bit of logic in it, perhaps not overriding logic, but estate tax returns are due 9 months after the date of death. If you started the session the special session February of 2008, working back 9 months got us to just about May 1. So the thought was that returns would have come in prior to the beginning of the special session. So that is how that date was determined. There was a question about an estate just barely over the $1 million threshold and the amount of liability that's imposed on that estate for Oregon. And I believe it is correct that it is around $40,000 to $45,000. But the reason that happens is we have a system that's a bit of a holdover from when we were connected to the federal tax system prior to 2001. the federal filing threshold and the state filing threshold were both $1 million. So an estate could have a total liability of $44,000, but it split that between the federal government and the state government. The federal threshold has increased now to $3.5 million. Oregon has remained at $1 million, so instead of splitting that liability between Oregon and federal, it all comes to Oregon. So that's, I think, the primary reason that you have that amount for that value of an estate. Madam Chair, I believe that's all I have.
Okay, maybe you could comment, having seen more, having been closer to the use of this exemption than or this credit than we are, the people generally, can you make any generalizations? The people who are handling estates during this time period of the retroactivity, were they worse off than they would have been if we'd done absolutely nothing, or did they get some benefit but just not as much as they thought they would get overall?
Madam Chair, I'm reminded of a comment from an attorney at one of the meetings that we had to talk about this, and the comment was estates should never be paying tax to either the federal government or to the state with appropriate planning. And I think that would be the key here, is that absent any planning, it's my understanding that an estate would have owed the same amount prior to the 2007 legislation that they would owe with the repeal, assuming they didn't fit within the parameters of the 2008 legislation. In other words, there would have been no difference for an estate of a person dying in 2005 versus the estate of a person dying today who did not qualify for...
But supposing somebody fit within the parameters, in other words, they met the criteria for receiving what was in the 2007 legislation was interpreted as an exclusion, and we redefined as a credit in the 2008. So let's say you have a property that qualified for whatever it was at the time. Would they have been better off would the same rule have applied? In other words, did they get some benefit even though not as good a benefit? I'm not saying this very well, but...
Madam Chair, if I understand it correctly, I think there are some who did not get any benefit, who would have qualified under the 2007 legislation, and because of the 2008 retroactive repeal, then received no benefit at all. Were they worse off? I think some of them would argue that if you had done nothing with legislation in either 2007 or 2008, if the legislature had not acted at all, they would have planned to not owe any tax at all.
Yeah, that's not my question.
Okay.
We're talking about natural resource, the handling of natural resource property. So the people had natural resource property, and they had they handled it in their estate a certain way under the 2007 legislation, and then in 2008 it went retroactive back to when 2007 legislation started. So they were basically covered under 2008 legislation. Did they get any benefit from that, or was it the same as if we had just left them at $1 million exclusion?
Madam Chair, I think there are some that did not receive any benefit from the 2008. What we have heard from are those that don't meet the 50% threshold, and I think that was a critical piece. They met the 2007 because they had some qualified natural resource property, but it wasn't at least half of the value of the estate. Therefore, they qualified for nothing under the 2008.
Okay, so that's what I'm trying to get at. What you're mostly seeing in these is people who did not meet the threshold rather than the difference in treatment between an exclusion and a credit.
Madam Chair, I think it will be both. Some will not have met the 50%, but again, our understanding of the 2007 legislation was that it would have been an off-the-top for every estate, regardless of the estate's size. So a $50 million estate with $10 million of natural resource property would have been able to subtract out $7.5 million of that property from the Oregon estate. In the 2008 legislation, that estate doesn't even come into playing the game because they're over the $15 million in value. So there's also that component, that sector that would not qualify for any benefit under the 2008 legislation.
Okay, thank you. Questions of Ms. Buchanan? For the committee's benefit, I think I was the only... Were you here in the special session? You weren't here yet.
Yes, I was.
You were. You made a great impression, Senator Hess.
I did well on this bill.
The purpose of the bill, as Mr. Stone said, was to keep families who were family farms from having to sell off property to pay estate taxes, and that's why we put the 50% threshold in. We wanted to focus our limited revenue impact on, you know, family farms that actually depended on it.
Senator Morris. I guess just to make a comment, Madam Chair, it seems just a matter of broad tax policy. If we're prone to make retroactive provisions that change the rules of the game and cause taxpayers to pay more than they would have otherwise, I think that's a real slippery slope. And I think it begs, seriously begs fairness.
I think Senator Morris is on to something. I'd be very interested if maybe we could work with the department to find out if there's anybody the most serious problem would be is if people, before we pass this, if people, because of the 2008 legislation, were worse off than they would have been if nothing had been passed for natural resources. In other words, if they were under the same system as all other Oregonians, because we're all under this $1 million exemption. The exemption exists as a special thing for natural resources policy. So if you have some of these natural resources people who actually did worse than they would have under the law that affects all other Oregonians, then that would be something we'd definitely want to find out.
Madam Chair, if I may, I'm not sure that any would have been worse, but I think the point you heard from the proponents is that they would have done sufficient planning that they would not have owed the tax that they owe now. So had you not passed anything in 2007 and 2008, it's very likely that many of them would argue their planning would have resulted in no tax. But because they didn't need to do the planning, since this benefit was there, the planning's not an option any longer, and it would be very difficult, I think, to say who would have planned to owe no tax, who would not, who would have owed this money anyway.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I may add also the 2007 definitions, I guess, that we would were also they were retroactive when we passed them, but they were not workable at that time. Right. There was a great deal of discussion of how many lawsuits are there because nothing was clear of who's qualified for what. So 3618 was to clarify this, and there was no choice of leaving it open because otherwise interpretation would have been differently. So it has to go and cover all the questions that were before the time. So every 3201 would be applying to nothing. Otherwise, the interpretation would have been strange in all of them.
Yeah. Okay. Good point. Thank you. Okay, any other questions of Ms. Buchanan or Mazin?
Thank you. Okay,
we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 347. And any more business for the committee? We are adjourned.